Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C. This is Agriculture Today.
Will it get worse next week?
Brad Rippey, meteorologist with USDA.
Probably. We'll probably see somewhat colder temperatures moving in, even compared to what we'll see this weekend. And that outbreak inevitably will expand eventually to cover much of the central and eastern United States, similar to what we saw in December. At this early stage, it does not appear to be quite as severe as the December cold outbreak, but it is potentially a force to be reckoned with in terms of livestock stress, potential injury to winter grains and cover crops. And then as we get deeper into the event, there is the potential for some wintry weather accompanying that cold weather that could complicate the entire situation. So certainly keep your calendar marked for early February. Interesting weather, very cold weather returning to much of the central and eastern United States.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
It's January, February, right? So January and February, it's like our July, August here, but for Argentina and Brazil. Right. So it's the heart of their growing season right now.
Steve Georgie with Allendale has been watching the export scene closely.
And so what kind of gave a lot of spark, you look what happened in beans today, jumping 25 cents on the idea that Argentina, the 6 to 10 day forecast is a little bit drier and certainly dry in certain areas. But you really look at it. And yes, we are focusing on South America. Brazil has had adequate rainfall. You know, you got some guys, and I don't want to use the B word, but some people throwing out that bumper crop idea for Brazil, but we still need to get there. There's still a lot of growing season still to go there for Brazil. Argentina, though, this drier weather and coming at the wrong time could be hurting these yields more than we think. And that's why the market is really reacting. Bean meal finding a ton of strength, but soybeans here certainly following suit. So we do need to watch that from a South American perspective on what that's really what's going on. But for corn, it might be a little bit too late, the drier weather coming in. We do feel that the estimates right now that USDA is sitting with for corn might be a little bit too high and that there needs to be a reduction. But the only way to really measure that, though, we can sit and talk about it. We need to see it in the way of demand. Corn demand is certainly lacking. If they're not going to have the corn in South America, well, then how can we judge that? That needs to now shift to the U.S. We need to see it in sales, and we're just not there yet. For soybeans, we are ahead of pace as far as export sales. So that's good. You can make that argument, and that's why you've got beans doing what they're doing. But corn's kind of stale, kind of stalling out at these levels. That's because of the demand side. We can look at Argentina. We could say it's dry. We know they've got issues, but it needs to come in the way of sales. That's what's going to spark the market or maybe push funds back into this market again. But right now, that's where our focus needs to be is on sales, and we're just not getting it yet.
What about domestic buyers?
You know, when you say the domestic buyers, yeah, that's absolutely correct. You know, what we have is, and we've seen our basis levels that have been very, very strong this year, right? Cattle feeders are certainly, I mean, they're paying up for corn. It is expensive at these levels. We know that. But on the global market, we are still overpriced. As much as we want to say, hey, we're going to make these sales or have more of a global export presence, we're overpriced. We're not going to see that for corn, not at these levels. So that's not been our primary focus. But when we're looking below a 1.3 billion carryout right now for corn, we don't really want that either. Because if we got that number any tighter as far as carryout, well, that means prices are probably going to go higher as well. So the demand for corn internally has outweighed or outpaced any demand that we've had from the external side. So it is something that needs to be watched for corn. Now for soybeans, we have been appropriately priced with Brazil. We're seeing some token business. China continues to buy, or even unknown, which mostly is China. But the big thing is that we have seen the demand side for soybeans. Carryout numbers sitting just above 200 million. If we do get too cheap and we see exports pick up even more, now what? Do we drop below 200 million? It seems like we're pretty happy right here in this area too, but exports for beans have been good. But that's the other side of it. If Brazil starts to get too cheap and we start losing export sales, that may change the picture. But we're not there yet. Brazil is having a good crop. They're getting plenty of rain, but we need to watch demand. And that's where for beans, it might be a little bit more exciting. For corn, USDA's got a problem on their hands, and they're going to need to make some adjustments here as far as sales and the export picture, just because the fact we're not selling anything. And at these price levels, we probably aren't.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
When we think about exporting livestock products, how often do you think about bison? John Harith has more.
U.S. bison is seeking access to the Japanese market. The industry recently had an opportunity to make the case to Japanese officials in a visit to some U.S. bison processing facilities, according to Jim Matheson, executive director of the National Bison Association.
We've been lobbying Japan for access for bison imports for some time now, working with the Foreign Ag Service primarily. And we've started the process years ago. And so happened that when we were in D.C. in September for our fly-in, we were sitting down with the Foreign Ag Service, and they let us know that there's a Japanese delegation that was coming to Colorado in December. They expressed interest to tour a bison processing plant, which, as I understand it, is kind of the first step for their consideration of opening up for our products. So fortunately, we have our biggest bison processor based here in Colorado in Rocky Mountain Natural Meats. We met up at Brush Meat Processors in Brush, Colorado, which is their kill plant, and had a great tour of the bison slaughter facility there in Brush. We're able to see some animals being processed.
The group also toured a bison fabrication facility in Henderson, Colorado, and enjoyed some bison ribeyes. Matheson says there is strong interest on both sides of the Pacific in opening up bison trade.
We are a relatively small sector of American agriculture, and we processed about 75,000 head of bison last year here in the U.S., which was a record year for us. That said, you know, we do have members in our association that are seeking to export actively to Japan. At the same time, we have folks in Japan that are seeking bison imports. So we're trying to connect those folks, of course, and show the governments, both U.S. and Japan, that there is significant demand there. There's virtually no competition for bison from these other countries. You know, bison is uniquely American. Literally all the product you'll see in the marketplace was born and raised in North America.
I'm John Harith.
So we move from bison to eggs.
The highly pathogenic avian influenza outbreak is causing a short supply of eggs, leading to higher prices for consumers. According to American Farm Bureau Federation economist Barrett Nelson, the key factor is inventory of laying hens.
Avian influenza has really affected now just over 58 million birds since it began about a year ago in February of 2022. Egg prices have skyrocketed recently, with the national averages up right around 49% from last year. So consumers have been paying, in some cases, is nearly double what they had in past years. So what's causing the rise in egg prices? Really the decreased layer inventory due to avian influenza. That's the primary factor.
And egg demand is projected to increase 7% this year. So to lower egg prices, Nelson says supplies would need to move higher.
What would have to happen for a slowdown in prices to occur would be a slowdown in the outbreaks of avian influenza. So what we'll really be watching for is a slowdown in avian influenza going into the spring months so that the inventory has some time to rebuild. That would be most helpful in keeping prices down.
For poultry farmers, Nelson says they are also facing increased production costs.
These outbreaks have been devastating. When we talk about an outbreak occurring on a farm where you're faced with the risk of depopulation, that combined with the effects of increased input costs, and that really increases break-even prices, especially when we think about covering, you know, our cost of production.
Michael Clements, Washington.
It's a comprehensive look at agribusiness, news, markets, and weather. It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
In a period when the stakes are relatively high, you know, we have, you know, cash corn prices with a number that's in the high sixes, something around 675, 680 right now. We have still something close to $15 soybeans. So I think, like, the one thing that we can say is that the stakes for the grain markets are very high in a year like this year.
University of Illinois ag economist Joe Jansen on the grain market outlook for this year.
So what we want to do is just identify some of the factors that are relevant to prices, kind of discuss how they fit into the overall supply and demand picture using the balance sheet, and discuss how farmers might respond. I mean, one thing that we sort of, that came out of the meetings last week, was, you know, that we still have, you know, a marketing challenge, at the farm level in terms of marketing the crop that we harvested in 2022. There's still lots of old crop grain that needs to be priced. And then obviously, you know, we have a crop that we're going to plant in 2023. We're going to talk a little bit about planting prospects and sort of what planted acreage might look like going forward. And we'll kind of sort of bounce some ideas off of each other here, as we go forward.
And on wheat,
we saw USDA come out with their winter wheat seedings report that showed, you know, pretty strong, an increase in winter wheat seedings in the country as a whole. And really talk about the sort of the wild ride that wheat prices have been on over the course of 2022, and maybe how that a little bit relates to the corn and soybean marketing situation. Obviously, the big story here is, again, that war in Russia and Ukraine that really kicked off a pretty strong rally where prices nearly doubled over the course of the first 6 months of 2022, peaking in June. And that's a pretty rare scenario, right, when we see winter wheat prices peaking right around harvest time. Since then, with the Russia-Ukraine grain deal, and just sort of a general sense that, you know, the wheat supply and demand situation is not as tight as people might have initially feared, prices, we've given back pretty much all of that rally through the remaining half, the back half of 2022. The world kind of, one thing realizing that the world doesn't need U.S. wheat in the same way that it needs corn and soybeans. So if anything, it's, you know, supply and demand news for corn and beans that's kind of leading the way. There's not a lot of support from sort of outside ag markets. We're seeing, you know, wheat prices down back in, you know, relatively, sort of average levels, somewhere in that $7 range. And with, you know, the prospect of large crops in other parts of the world. So the other thing about the wheat market is, you know, wheat production's dispersed all around the world. We've seen good crop news coming out of Australia, and then, you know, lots of other places where we can draw wheat. The supply and demand situation for wheat is not as tight. There's not sort of, I think, a reason to believe that you know, wheat market will kind of have any influence on corn and beans.
Ag economist at Illinois State, Dr. Scott Irwin.
It's pretty remarkable to see that $5 a bushel drop in the face of an ongoing, very severe drought in the Great Plains wheat growing area of the United States, and no let up in the war, although there is the shipping agreement, which is important. But even nonetheless, compared to the fears that existed, say, in April and May, and it's a great lesson that, we had really more wheat around than the rhetoric, and the market did its job. And I'm glad to see that happened, and we didn't need to take some extraordinary measures like I was getting people to think about last spring. So it worked.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Many times in the past, we've written legislation such that there's a lot of wiggle room, and yet, you know, with a clear intent, but the agencies have simply not followed that.
Ranking member of the Senate Ag Committee from Arkansas, Dr. John Bozeman.
Now, the good news is we have a Supreme Court now that actually is looking at the intent of the people that frame the laws and then trying to follow through with that. So we've had some good rulings that are starting to bring the agencies back in check. And I think that's one of the, you know, one of the really important things that have happened in the last year or so are those kind of rulings to make sure that the agencies don't exceed their authority, which you know, is the case in many times, and Congress has to do a better job in being more prescriptive as they write the laws, and then too, hold the agencies accountable.
It's what happens when Congress doesn't do their work, talking about waters of the U.S., but what about trade?
Trade is so important in Arkansas and throughout so many of our states. It's about 40% of of what's grown is exported. So we not only need to maintain the market share that we have, but we need to constantly be looking for new markets. And sadly, as you look at the trade last year, we slipped. You know, things are down. And so I am concerned that this administration does not seem to really care about putting the trade agreements in place. So we're going to be working to encourage them to do a better job that way. I'm very pleased. We worked hard to get Michaelab and Alexis Taylor, our trade people, in place so that they could start doing this. The other thing, too, is that recently, you know, Secretary Vilsack has gotten involved. Michaelab and Taylor have gotten involved with the Mexico situation. So not only do we need to do a good job of writing trade agreements, getting trading partners lined up, but we need to hold them to what they've agreed to. And the situation we have now, you know, with GMOs in Mexico and stuff is just totally unacceptable. And I've been pleased. Secretary Vilsack is doing a good job standing out. And again, our trade people have been pretty tough. Hopefully Congress will also, you know, do a good job of supporting that. I know that they are so far, but really holding Mexico accountable if they go down this path of, not allowing GMO, white corn, all of the things that they're talking about doing.
Now, as important as a member of Congress is, maybe more important is their staff. Darren Kopic with the Ag Retailers Association.
A lot of the staff are the ones that are analyzing bills, recommending to members what their positions are, briefing them on issues. They're kind of filtering what we might offer to give them and what the member actually gets. So it's important for us to be able to establish a relationship with them. So that's why we spend a lot of time on the Hill doing exactly that, meeting new members, but also getting to know their staff.
But sometimes things have to break for others to notice how important they are.
It really underscores the importance of the entire supply chain. Somebody jokingly said in a recent presentation I heard that, you know, if the whole economy and the whole country got panicked because of a shortage of toilet paper, imagine what would happen if we had a shortage of food.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
And it's time for our government to go to work.
He's a former Secretary of Agriculture in the Reagan administration. That's John Block.
The Senate and House both are in the process of naming who will serve on the different committees. The Republican-led House is scheduled to take up a GOP energy bill, and it will direct the Biden administration to come up with a plan to increase oil and gas production on federal lands before drawing down our strategic petroleum reserve anymore. Now, we know that President Biden does not want the United States to pump more oil. He wants to buy it from other countries. So what will happen? We'll see. In farm country, the need to pass a new farm bill is at the top of our list. Paul Ryan, former House Speaker, speaking at the Dairy Foods Association Forum last Sunday, predicts that we will pass a new farm bill this year. House Ag Committee Chairman G.T. Thompson and Senate Ag Committee Chairwoman Debbie Stabenow will give us that bipartisan ag leadership that we need, and I'm optimistic. Focus on Mexico now. Yes, China is our biggest ag export market, but Mexico is close behind. Mexico wants to ban imports of genetically modified corn. Our U.S. Ag Secretary, Tom Vilsack, he said, that's not going to happen. So good job. Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Keep the pressure on. Another subject, our worst avian influenza outbreak that we have ever had. The bird flu attack started about 1 year ago. When we get it, the whole poultry flock must be destroyed. 58 million of poultry in 47 states are dead gone. Egg farmers are not insured. The virus has been devastating. Protecting the flocks has not been easy. Wild birds flying north or south, they just spread it everywhere they go. I have not talked about this new subject now, but it is in the news every day. We all remember all of the news and attention focused on secret government documents found at President Trump's Mar-a-Lago resort. Well, the nation's news media was attacking Trump every day. Well, now President Biden is in the hot seat. The FBI is investigating. They seem to find secret papers almost wherever they look. I know some people thought President Trump should be put in jail for his reckless handling of secret papers. Now they have to think about President Biden's problem and what to do. We now have news that former Vice President Pence has some classified papers in his home. I guess President Trump is not alone.
Former Secretary of Ag, John Block. Well, Bart Kenner is an economist with USDA on why China has been buying more U.S. soybeans and sorghum.
These are things that go into animal feeds, and China has had an effort to rebuild the livestock production that they had lost when they had a lot of devastation from African swine fever.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
When I started years ago, cotton had basically two problems, and that was it wrinkled and it would had a shrinkage issue.
Barry Worksham is president and CEO of Cotton Incorporated.
So synthetics were not cheaper than cotton back then. So the synthetic problems were things like pilling and odor and maybe didn't wash clean and you had ring around the collar and some other things. So once we were able to solve just those problems, the wrinkle resistance and the shrinking, that allowed us to promote cotton to get it to where we were gaining market share. Well, the problem today is that, synthetics are more refined than they used to be. So today it's really it's so many things. It's like we have to continue to refine technologies like moisture transfer. We have something called trans dryer on that, wicking windows. And probably the one that's, I think, a little bit excited about is the reemergence of a technology we call tough cotton, which helps the product in durability. You know, if you've had khaki pants in the past and you see the abrasion that takes place on the cuffs of your pants or on the pockets, you know, we have a technology that will greatly improve that. And the reason that might be important is because, you know, the wash and throw away or the short-term fast fashion, as they call it, you know, where you buy something cheap and you wear it a little while and you toss it out, that's really becoming a no-no in the sustainability world and circularity world, and having products that last longer as an asset could be an asset going forward. So we're excited about that. And we have things like Pure Press, another upscale wrinkle-resistant technology. And everything we're doing in this whole area is we're trying to find whatever we use in terms of a chemistry or a process, it's got to be sustainable. So we're looking at things like sustainable dyes and knit to shape where there's no waste, recycling potential where they maybe take a little bit of the cotton and reuse it into other fabrics. And you have to have a story there. And then we're even looking at the possibility of how we can take cotton products and then instead of and they end up in a landfill, maybe they could be recycled in terms of conversion to sugars and then repurposed into some other area. So there's a lot of little things that are very important, and you know, you have to have a story to tell today, and we're trying to tell cotton stories in the best possible way we can.
Barry Worsham with Cotton Incorporated, now another organization with a different set of members, Ag Retailers Association.
We have a broad cross-section of members, probably the most diverse membership of an ag organization that I've been involved in.
The CEO of ARA. Darren Kopic.
Our core demographic, obviously, is the ag retailer. That's our middle name. And so those are the companies that are out there serving growers every day with products and services that they need to grow crops, whether those are broadacre crops like corn or wheat or soybeans, or whether they are, or cotton. I better throw that in for Texas. Or if they're specialty crops, it doesn't matter. We represent retailers on all of those issues and try to find things that we can do that benefit all of them. Some of our members are family-owned businesses. Some of them are smaller cooperatives. Some of them are big cooperatives. Some of them are publicly traded or even national companies with footprints in multiple states. And our strength is to be able to bring the voices and interests and priorities of all of that diverse membership together, along with our supplier members who also contribute to this, and advocate something that's really hopefully in the best interest of the entire value chain.
And why do they advocate for farmers?
We're focused on the retailers, but the retailer's success depends on the farmer. And so that's where the rubber meets the road. If the farmer's not successful, our members won't be either. And that's why we work so hard to try to make sure that they will be.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Dialogue continues between the U.S. and Mexico on that nation's decree to phase out use and importation of genetically engineered corn and other products by this time next year. Dialogue that has been ongoing since the Mexican government's announcement last November of modifying that decree. And as Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack pointed out earlier this month, our nation's reply is that more needs to be done.
We believe in a science-based system.
The latest meeting Monday between U.S. and Mexican officials did not produce resolution. And via a joint USDA-U.S. Trade Representative's Office press release, our nation indicated it would explore all options if an agreement was not reached. Watching closely, members of the U.S. corn industry like grower Tom Haig.
If we have to go all non-GMO, I don't know how many farmers will switch, but it's going to cost more money for that Mexican family to eat than what they are right now.
I'm Rod Bain reporting from Washington, D.C.